học gà nướng, học vịt lộn, học vịt sữa, trứng cút lộn, bắp xào đây.
Hey, this is Neil Mackay, your host of a Vietnam podcast. Now, before we get started on this episode, I wanted to share with you about one of my favorite affiliate partners, and that is Fiverr. I've been using Fiverr for years for everything from ordering YouTube thumbnails to keyword research, writing podcast articles, even to Canva designs and thumbnails and more. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a podcaster, or anyone in between, Fiverr has got you covered. It really is the go-to platform if you want to find freelancers offering a massive range of services to help you on any project. Maybe you need a stunning new logo or just a short animation, whatever you need, you can find it on Fiverr. What I love the most is how easy Fiverr makes it to connect with talented freelancers from around the world, all at prices that will fit whatever your budget is. Plus, with Fiverr's secure payment system, you can trust that your transactions are safe and secure. No dodgy people you meet on Facebook groups that disappear with your money and never give you what you want. What, that's only happened to me? As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you use the link and at no extra cost to you. As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you click my link and you buy something, all at no extra cost to you. And best of all, you will be directly supporting the making of this podcast that you're listening to for free, but it is not free to make. So why wait? Head over to somewhere that you've probably never been before. It's called the show notes. So whatever app you're listening in, if it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anything at all, head to the show notes, click on my special link, and then you can browse thousands of gigs ready to help you with your next project. And now, let's dive into today's episode. Let's go. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 3 of A Vietnam Podcast. My name is Neil Mackay. I've been living in Vietnam since 2016 and hosting this podcast since 2019. I wanted to know more about the people that lived in Vietnam, both local and foreigners, and share their story. We now share stories from people around the world. My guest today is Hungarian Vietnam, currently living in Saigon, to reconnect with her roots and explore her life from a more creative perspective. She's a life purpose coach and fellow podcaster, hosting the Creators in Vietnam podcast with previous guest Tuasi Nguyen. In this episode, we'll explore the connection between Hungary and Vietnam, what made her decide to reconnect with her roots, and the challenges and excitement of working as a creator, and how to find meaning in whatever we do. My guest today is Moni Le.
Hi, Neil. Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here and, yeah, talk to you again. It's actually the second time we talk, or the third, and two of them are through a podcast.
Thank you so much. So for anyone who doesn't know yet, I was on the Creators in Vietnam podcast a couple of months ago, which was awesome, with Tuasi and Moni. Both of them on a Vietnam podcast, and we've just interviewed Tuasi. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So first of all, that's my first question, is what I said in the introduction. I want to know more about the connection between Hungary and Vietnam, because it's something I was not aware of at. And then when we first met, you kind of told me a bit more about it. I now know more Hungarian Vietnamese people, and there's definitely a lot of these countries, especially Eastern European countries, that I wasn't aware had such a deep connection with Vietnam. With a brief history of that.
Okay, just so you know, like, I don't have the full-on detailed history about the connection, but I know kind of the surface level connection between the two. So, sorry, Neil, there's a slow internet connection. I wonder if it's okay.
So, for me.
Okay. So the connection between the two is simply as that Hungary was part of the Soviet bloc. And back then, during the when Soviet Union was still there and complete, there were connections between the different socialist countries, so Vietnam and other socialist countries like Czech Republic, Hungary, even Slovakia, and all of those, Russia. And they had a chance to actually travel in between. So my father had a chance to go to Hungary to study, and my mom had a chance to go to Hungary to work. And basically that was the connection between the two. So they were like kind of an exchange in between. I guess it's for economical reasons, also for, and yeah, that's it. I don't know the full, very detailed history, how the connection is exactly established, but that's all I know. I just know that it's Erasmus student network for socialist countries.
So was there a big migrant community in Hungary from Vietnam?
Not so much. It's very small, actually, in Hungary. It's only a few hundred thousand people. So there are so much more in Poland, for example, or Czech Republic. But in Hungary, it's also a very small economy. So I think that's the reason not many Vietnamese went to Hungary.
The Vietnamese people were like, we don't want to go to Hungary. We'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, but I'm actually very happy that my parents chose Hungary. Hungary is really close to my heart. I consider it as one of my homes. And
what
yeah,
are your homes?
I love.
You have?
I have maybe two or three homes. I think I would still feel home in the Netherlands when I lived 5 years. And I also start to feel at home in Vietnam as well. And for me, I realized that the concept of home is not necessarily about the location, but more about where do I have people that I feel connected with. If I feel the connection with the people in those countries, that for me, it's already kind of home.
Yeah, I mean, so
makes sense.
No, no, makes complete sense. I mean, I left Scotland at 20 and I've had several homes since then as well. And it's just kind of, yeah, it's always been based on people rather than a place, you know? So no, absolutely. And so, and a bit of a, to add a bit of cheesiness to it, but you know, my wife and I, our wedding song is a song by, I've forgotten his name now off the top of my head. I should know that, but the song is called Home, which, and the main line is, home is wherever I'm with you. And so even as a married couple, we've moved about a lot. And so it's kind of the, yeah, I mean, changed several times with each other, but as long as so, but it still ties into that same thing. It's wherever you're with people make the home, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I learned to define home that way rather than in terms of identity. I used to have an identity crisis, like, oh my god, where do I belong? But I think many foreign Vietnamese have that. And it made so much sense to me to redefine home in terms of the people. So I don't feel like I'm not belong to anywhere, but this way I belong to so much more places.
Yeah, yeah. And that's true. AC said something similar as well about, and it's something many guests have, we've talked about with other guests, is this identity crisis, because something that I've learned over the course of this podcast and just interviewing so many people, being from Scotland, living all around the world, not being exposed, obviously, to the Vietnamese community at all, really. It's incredible how massive the Vietnamese diaspora is and spread across the world. And it's something we talked about as well with Tracy Nguyen Mang as well from the Vietnamese Boat People podcast. Do you think that now is a really a time that we're seeing an explosion in visibility of the Vietnamese diaspora, or they're starting to come to the forefront doing so many amazing things? Or what we talked about is, do we just notice it because we make podcasts about Vietnam? What are your thoughts?
Maybe actually you are right that we notice it more because we make a podcast about it. And I notice more about it because maybe search a little bit more about it. But I don't necessarily kind of seek for it. So for me, I rather seek for the personality of the person rather than in terms of identity. So I myself don't have that kind of pain in the family. I mean, I have a different pain in the family compared to the people who had to be, who had to become refugees after, during the war. My parents actually, like the kids after the war. So they were born during the war and they were growing up when the war started to end. So they lived in hardship and then they moved to Hungary for economical reasons. And not because of the war per se. I mean, after the war, in Vietnam, there was nothing. It was poor. They were barely any jobs. So they had their own struggles. But I myself, I didn't hear stories from my parents like, oh, Vietnam is a shitty place. I should not go back. And so they didn't have that. They always told me like, you have to respect your own heritage. You have to be there. You have to remember that you're Vietnamese. And we went back to Vietnam every 3 years. So I always had this kind of connection with Vietnam. But I, of course, I also had a little bit of craving of connecting with people like my background, like overseas Vietnamese. But I didn't search for it so intentionally. I just came to Vietnam and I reconnected with other Vietnamese like me. And I'm like, oh, this is great. It feels good. So I don't see whether like they are more in the forefront or not compared to before. I just see it more than even Vietnam.
But that's really interesting though. So I kind of forget how young you are, because most of the guests that we've had on, and we've talked about this and you've probably heard some of these episodes, many of the guests, their parents left because of the war. We've interviewed many people whose parents left as refugees. And you're one of the first kind of Vietnamese overseas, I think, that we've spoken to, that their parents, that you're so young, that your parents are so young, that they actually left post-war, which does give a completely different perspective for you and your parents then.
Yeah, exactly. So they left Vietnam to support actually the family back home. And they at the end, like, so whatever they did in Hungary, they did it all for the family, for the bigger family. And they always have a deep connection with Vietnam, no matter what. Yeah. And even now. So that's why my story is a bit different compared to those who left Vietnam because of the war.
And that was something else I learned, that the Vietnam immigration has happened in three waves. So the first wave was the refugees from the war. Then we have the economic immigration, which your parents were obviously then part of that wave. And then now this third wave over the last 10 years has been an educational immigration, where more and more Vietnamese people are leaving for overseas education, and then but many of them are coming back. So what was it like then growing up in Hungary, but coming back every 3 years? And you mentioned this identity crisis and reconnecting with your roots. Did you really feel like you are from two places, or did you, like you mentioned as well, obviously Netherlands, but before we get to that, did you grow up feeling Hungarian or feeling Vietnamese? Like, how did that work?
I wanted to be completely Hungarian, to be honest with you. So the identity crisis is coming from that at home, everything was so Vietnamese in terms of values. It was very traditional. My mom told me I should dress this way as a girl. I should study well. I have to work hard and all of that. And when I went outside of the house, everything was so much more fun. Like I could do whatever. Like everybody was so much more liberal in terms of how they view life. Like you have the freedom to choose what you study, what are you doing. And when I saw other families of my friends who are Hungarian and see the conversation between them and their parents, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so much nicer. like for example, every weekend, like my mom is like asking me like, clean the house. Why aren't you helping? You should help me to cook. As a woman, you should know how to cook. So you have to follow me and then learn it by heart. And so when you have a family, you know how to take care of them. And my friends didn't have that. And I'm like, I want to be Hungarian. I don't want to be Vietnamese. But obviously, I also picked up some of the Vietnamese values through my parents. For example, this collectivism, like, you know, caring for each other, family is always first. And also this kind of hardworking mentality, his resilience and strength. So what was your question again? Like, yeah, like the identity crisis. Yeah, that was the source of the identity crisis. Like, I want actually to be Hungarian and do whatever I want to do. But no, I go home and everybody's telling me what I should do instead.
And then, well, then what was that like then when you would come to Vietnam every 3 years? Were you then getting the opposite of like, you're so Hungarian, you're not Vietnamese enough? Or how did your family react to?
Actually, it was interesting because when I went to Vietnam, everybody just said, oh, she is not from Vietnam, so let her be, let her do her thing. Oh, she do it differently. It's okay, it's fine. She's obviously Vietnamese. She's not like us. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I don't have to do whatever my cousins are doing. I don't have to obey. And if I didn't follow the traditions the way I supposed to, I was like, okay, she doesn't know, so let her be.
Yeah, you're given a free pass.
Yeah, I got a free pass.
I thought it may have been the opposite, you know, like the like, oh, she doesn't know, and then getting annoyed about it. So that's pretty awesome.
Well, my parents would get annoyed by it. Like,
they're embarrassed by you.
And like at home, my parents like, you know, as a Vietnamese, you should do it this and this way. Don't do it other way. Other people would judge you and they would criticize you. And I'm like, okay, fine. And then when I go there and go to Vietnam and do it wrong, people just like, oh, it's fine. She doesn't know.
So what was Vietnam like then? Because obviously, as you mentioned, very poor, lots of poverty back then. What Vietnam from... I mean, so you're in your mid-20s, is that right? So we're talking about you were coming here. No, you're older?
Thank you so much, Neil, to think that I'm in my mid-20s.
Mid-20s, right?
I'm 29, so I'm approaching 30, so almost.
I'm 39 and approaching 40, so don't worry. It only gets better from here. You have nothing... to worry about. So you're in your 20s, I was right, mid to late 20s. So we're talking about then, so interesting, because for you coming then here as a child was only 20 years ago, which this is what makes me feel old. That's still the 2000s, the late 90s, early 2000s. So we're really not talking about that long ago. But
yeah,
Vietnam, which is a country that's moving so quickly, growing so quickly, changing so quickly, 20 years ago is probably like 40 years in, or 50 or 60 years of development in just 20 years. So what are your memories of Vietnam coming here? Were you coming to Saigon? Can you remember what it looked like? How has it changed?
We'll be right back.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
So actually, my family is not from Saigon. They are from Hue, which is the middle of the Vietnam. It's Miền Trung area. And I always went to my grandma straight in Hue whenever I came to Vietnam. And I spent a little bit of time in Hanoi, but most of my memories is in Hue. And I remember when I was very young, yeah, like 5 or 6 years old, I was still having showers in the well, like in the backyard. There was a well and I had showers there with my other cousins. It was actually really fun. English toilet was not a thing at that time yet, and life was so simple. And the thing is, I really had a really good time. There were not many proper roads yet. My uncle was taking me to school on a bike. Oh, I forgot to mention that I lived 1.5 years in Vietnam when I was 5 years old. So those are the memories that I have. We were always just like looking for ways to make games. I don't know, whatever small things you can find around, you just make games out of it. And it was very simple, but still a joyful life. I had to go to school on Saturday. That was not fun. But in general, it was for me a good memory to remind myself that I was happy even though we didn't have much. And now that we have so much, it's actually, I learned to appreciate so much more just because of that experience.
Mm. No, that's amazing. And I love that about kids. When we were old kids, it was so much fun how you can just make a game out of anything. I remember during one of the many lockdowns we had, looking out the window in the apartment below, and they have a little garden there. And the kids were just playing a game with flip-flops, and they were just trying to hit an empty bottle of water with a flip-flop, and it was whoever hit the bottle won, and they were just having the most fun. And I was like, man, kids are awesome. Like, you literally just need a flip-flop and a bottle of water, and you are as good to those.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even though, like, my family didn't have much money, I was so much more happier for the smaller joys, like one bag of chips for, at that time, 500 Vietnamese dong. And I felt like it was the most precious thing ever. And of course, I saw the evolution whenever I went back over the years to my grandma. I saw that the house got modern, like, I don't know, fresher paints and different objects. But somehow the traditions actually remain the same. So that's what I observe now over the years, that the surrounding is evolving, the environment, but the traditions, that strict traditions that is very peculiar in the Miền Trung area, is still there. I don't know, for example, my grandma, you cannot enter the house from the altar, you have to go around. Or if you have a period, she said, like, don't walk in front of the altar. You're going to disrespect the ancestors. And, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And then, so tell me then, how did you end up in Holland?
Oh, Holland was a really nice 5 years of my life. I just went there to study first. I didn't thought I'm going to stay 5 years, but I ended up staying 5 years. After my master's degree, I worked there at the company and I just had fun. I don't know if you've been in the Netherlands, but if you are young and you are in the Netherlands, yeah, you're going to have the best time. I was in Amsterdam.
I've only ever been for a soccer match, so I'm not really spending much time. It was more like we went by boat, watched the soccer match, and then came back to Scotland. So I haven't actually, I've been, but I've not really spent any time there. So what made you choose to study in the Netherlands then?
I don't know. I often make choices based on how I feel instinctively. And I went there as a tourist just to check out how it is. And I felt like, oh, I can actually live here. And when it came to applying to university, okay, it sounds a bit lame, but the cheapest option was the Netherlands.
I mean, that's not lame at all. That makes perfect sense. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like, okay, the price is only 1,500 euro for a year. It's a nice place. There you go.
Yeah, nice. What age were you when you moved there?
I was 23. So, yeah.
You can went by a master's degree. You've done your degree in Hungary already.
Yeah, in Hungary, I did my bachelor degrees. And then I moved to the Netherlands to do my master's. And life is fun. When you are so young in the Netherlands, yeah, you have to go there to really experience it, the music scene, the party life, the nightlife, and also the way people see life over there is just like so much more pragmatic, so much more easygoing, and I really like that, and I felt like I really needed that for my own personal exploration.
Yeah.
Because living close to your parents in Hungary, it's, I don't know if you know much about Asian parents, but they are very invested in their children's life.
Well, we've held this, and we've talked about this with several guests as well. It's definitely, it's one of these, I think this is what we've talked about as well. There's so, you know, it's, the thing about a stereotype is that most stereotypes are kind of true in a way. And the stereotype of the Asian tiger parents is one that is definitely, definitely true.
Yeah. And to be honest, I also wanted to escape that a little bit.
Yeah.
By moving abroad.
It's a common theme that we've held of as well.
It's hard. I can explain to you and other people who don't have such parents, but it's so hard for them to understand how does it really feel. Like, I feel sometimes like my views are so different that I feel like talking to a wall whenever I talk about it with my parents. Like, it's not going through. Like, there's a theater. If you talk about working at a company, having a good job and having a good salary, okay, everybody hears it and they cheer on you. Good job. Yes, keep going. Do it. You do a good job. If I talk about, I want to pursue a more creative type of lifestyle and then do what I love to do and enjoy life, that as if like nothing been heard, like as if like I talked to no one. And then they were just like, okay. So when will you get the job?
Oh, we talked about this just on the recent episode as well with Ben, because he was similar. He wanted to pursue an artistic career. His parents didn't really get it. And I wanted to mention it, and then we got talking about something else. Is this oversimplifying it? But it almost feels like, you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't think other than teacher, doctor, fireman. You know, you're like, you just don't. When I was a child, you can't think of any jobs. You don't know of any jobs. Are Asian parents just similar that they just don't know any other jobs? They're just very childlike. They're like, you're going to be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, a teacher, because they just haven't heard of any other jobs. I know it's changing now. This is something me and Ben talked about. But is that oversimplifying it, or is it just like these are the five jobs that, because any student that I talk to, any Vietnamese person I talk to, is literally like five jobs that they're expected to do: lawyer, doctor, accountant, teacher. I don't know. Like, that's it.
I mean, to understand their point of view, that being understanding with them that they grew up in an environment where they were not much security, and in their view, those jobs create security financially and other aspects as well, according to them. But actually, most of the parents who force this, they are not working for a company. They hustle in their own life. So my parents, they never worked for a company and they always hustled something. But then in their view, I don't want my kids to suffer through that. So I want them to work at a company. But then I asked them, like, hey, guys, do you know how it feels like to work under someone? And they're like, no, but it's going to be for you.
That's too funny, right? That's too funny. Well, it's kind of almost as well as just the whole grass is greener on the other side, almost like we want this for you, but we don't want it for ourselves. I don't know if you've watched much. I think it's Ali Wong. I hate telling stories when I can't remember the details. But I think it's Ali Wong, or maybe it's Aziz Ansari, because he's also got the Rohingya parents. But they want you to be a doctor, right? But then, because they want you to give medical advice. But then when they want to get medical advice, they won't go and see a doctor. They'll go and see like the local medicine woman or something like that. Like, no, the doctor charges too. That's right. The joke is they want them to be a doctor so they can make lots of money. But they won't go and see a doctor because it costs too much to go and see the doctor.
Yeah. So it's all about earning money.
Yeah. I don't want to be mean, and I'm not making fun of Asian parents, because I do understand. I've spoken to enough people and they just want the best for their kids. And there's a completely historic reason why they want their kids to take those jobs and have a good life. But it still doesn't make it difficult for people. It doesn't make it easy, sorry, for people like yourself who and it's just a massive clash of, this is what I mentioned earlier, like Vietnam is developing at just an incredible rate. And you can see that with the development of buildings and whatnot, but even as a culture. All right. So here's an example. I had to teach a class today, and this was a government approved book, but the lesson was about demonstrations. And I felt really awkward teaching it because I'm like, students aren't allowed to demonstrate. And I had to teach them what a demonstration was, what a banner was, what a petition was. And this is, I know for a fact, it's a government approved textbook. So it's been looked through with a fine tooth comb. So it's obviously allowed to be taught. But man, I felt fucking awkward teaching it because I'm like, this, I mean, they should know what these things are. And this is the younger generation, obviously know what these things are, but they can't do it.
Yeah, honestly, what I experience now that there's a huge clash between generations, and not only in overseas, but also in Vietnam itself. When I talk to the younger generation, like, they are so innovative. They are so want to explore the world. They also so want to do something different than their parents. But the generational gap is so big, like, because the war hasn't been a long time ago. My parents, their parents are still living a life where there's not enough money. There's always some scarcity. So you have to really work hard to earn money. So it's all about earning money. But I see in today's generation that they do want to have fun. They do want to love what they do. And that's what I'm also supporting as well. But I also, at the same time, we try to be respectful for our own parents because they made a lot of sacrifice for us to have a choice. You know, sacrifice is a big word in Asian culture. So yeah, I understand their point of view, but you know, it's like a very challenging discussion between the two generations.
Yeah, and it's something we hear about more and more. So it is amazing when, I think again, in terms of Vietnam's development, that creative scene is developing as well and has been held back, obviously, monetarily, economically held back. Like you really need to have a growing economy so people have the money to be creative. Like when you creativity, what is like at the peak of kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like, so you need to make sure you have shelter and food and everything else is taken care of before you can even think about being creative. But that's another exciting part of Vietnam now, is I think we're starting to see now, because those lower needs are being taken care of for the majority of the population, obviously not everyone, but the majority of the population, that will now start to see more creativity, whether it's music, anything like, so this is now where you're coming into as well. So tell us then about your journey into creativity and how you as a creator see yourself, and how have you made that journey from, so what was your master's degree and how have you taken that and now going down a more creative path?
Well, my original background is not so creative. It's in business, but also I have marketing as well. So marketing is a bit more creative. And I think creativity was, for a long time, wasn't properly defined for myself, like what creativity is about. I always thought like you have to be a painter, a Picasso, doing some music, or to actually call yourself a creator. And also in the...
Sorry, just to quickly interrupt. I never thought of myself as being creative because I couldn't draw. You know, I couldn't paint. I don't write music. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm just not creative. And then it's only been over the last years, starting to do podcasts, starting to do comedy, that I'm like, oh, that's like a creative endeavor. Like you're creating something as well. And I'm kind of similar to you. I just thought to be creative, you had to be a painter or a designer or a musician or something. So sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I wanted to add that.
Yeah, exactly. And so many people have that misconception about creativity. And I live with that misconception, like, until I was 29. Because also, I think other Asian people can relate to that, creativity was not something that was encouraged for me. Like, my parents always gave me a book about IQ tests and logic books, and math was top priority. And yeah, all the rest, like literature, stuff like that, like it's fine. You just study because you have to. But math was the most important subject. And that's something I always have to study. I went to after classes even, and I never really found myself in math. And I always felt like, oh, I'm not good at really anything. And by the time I quit my job, started to browse through life and then finding my own way, like understanding what my purpose is, what I really like to do, what really brings me joy, I learned more about creativity. It's basically anything that you create from your heart. As simple as that. And it doesn't have to be a painting or a whole music piece. It can be as simple as a podcast, an article that you write, or any ideas that you share on Twitter or somewhere on other channels. So then I realized I am creative. Wait a minute. And that realization changed everything, because once I opened that door of creativity, so many other doors started to open up, because it's all really about like how you see the world, how you can mix things up in your own interpretation and express your ideas and thoughts. That's creativity. And it doesn't matter what's the mean. And I think you experienced the same.
And did that tie in at the same time as coming back to Vietnam, or did that influence that decision?
I mean, I didn't know that I'm gonna be a creator, to be honest, when I came back to Vietnam. I just only knew that I want to do something different. Like working for a company was fine. I had a good time. I had great colleagues. I developed a lot professionally, but I felt like I want to do something that I truly, truly love. And it makes an impact as well at the same time. So when I came to Vietnam, I was just really looking for, let's say, a purpose in my life. And when I started to coach last year, July, that's when everything just started to expand. Because through coaching, I realized it's actually my passion. It's actually my talent to coach someone. But through coaching, I also have opened up a creative chakra in myself. Let's call it that way. Because through coaching, I realized I love to help people. I love to help people open up their perspective about life in any aspects. And I started to find ways to do that. So my purpose is really to help people achieve their full potential. And coaching is only one part of it. But then it also makes me think like what kind of other ways I can find to educate people or help them. And I started to write regularly, and I'm still evolving in my writing practice. And I just love it, how much it enriched my creativity, the whole writing process. Like now at the moment, I just do blog articles, social media posts, but I want to expand it even further. And also like starting to do a podcast with Tracy, it also helped me to think life from a different perspective. And it's also kind of a creative process as well, because you just think of the impact that you want to make. And then the interview, you just don't know how it's going to end up, but you just learn how to flow with the other person. And I feel like it's also requires creativity in itself. So yeah, I'm also doing workshops, and it also requires me to think. Any kind of content creation is really requires creativity. And I realize how much it energizes me, how much alive I feel anytime I create. And that's why I, as a coach as well, I encourage everybody just to create, because the moment that you create, that's when you start to shift your mindset as well. Because when you create something new and something that is truly you. And that's the moment when you are really in the present moment in your life, when you create something. And that's why I really love about it. I don't know, how is your experience with creation, Neil? so far.
Well, my next question was going to be, what are the challenges of it? And that's, for me, is it brings more challenges than ever than having, you know, a normal. Well, but I guess before I was doing anything creative, I guess life was probably simpler, maybe, because you're not having to think and you have to deal with those. I felt like since, and I hate that as well, I hate that phrase, being a creative or being a creator, because it was something I never imagined. And then, you know, as I kind of mentioned, then you realize like, oh, wow, okay, I'm actually creating stuff. So that means I'm a creator, I guess. Definitely gives more challenges, I think, since I started doing that. So what, because that's what we talked about at the beginning. So what would you say then have been some of those challenges that you faced as a creator?
I think it's staying in balance. Because you can only create if you have that capacity in your mind to really think in a different perspective, connect your thoughts. And I remember end of last year, I was creating a lot. I pushed myself really hard. And I did have a creative burnout in December. And that was horrible. I couldn't think of any thoughts. Like, really, I wanted to do something and nothing came out. And I think that's the worst moment of any creator, when you cannot create because you don't have the mental capacity for it. So the challenge for me is really keeping myself balanced in a way that nurture my creativity, like, all the time. So it also means that when I feel tired, I just take a rest actively. I have to know the moment I have to stop and not to push further. Because with that, I also help my creativity. The moment I have to create, it becomes more like a flow. So when I'm in the right state, the thought just like flowing out naturally. It's like without any control. And that's what I want to achieve every time I create. But the challenging part is really to balance yourself so much to create that flow every day. So that would be the biggest challenge, I think, for any creator.
And I think these last 2 years have obviously been especially challenging. And I think that ties back in. It's something I remember discussing with maybe in person or on the podcast. Tying back into those Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The last couple of years have been so challenging for so many reasons for everyone. And many of the times you are just trying to make sure that you have, it sounds dramatic to make sure you have food and shelter, but the last two years have been so hard that sometimes you are just really making sure that, you know, are my basic needs being taken care of? So I've found that then to have that flow, like you said, or to have that rest to allow creativity, it has been really difficult, even sometimes to get to podcast interviews. I'm like, I don't really know to talk to someone. To me, it is emotionally draining to make these episodes, which for some people might be like, how is it emotionally draining? But it is, you've got to take time to be like, okay, I'm going to sit down and we're going to emotionally connect right now to bring this episode out. That takes a lot. And then in terms of comedy, yeah, I mean, if you're just trying to make sure that your basic needs of life are being fulfilled, you're not really feeling it. Because I even remember when I was in government quarantine 2 years ago, and so many people would say, oh, well, you know, you'll get good comedy from it. And I was like, fuck off. Fuck, don't want to think about comedy right now. Like, this is not a funny situation. But then maybe weeks or months later, then you think of, I thought of like a joke or two from that situation. So it would maybe come. I've recently just finished another period of home isolation after a bout of COVID. And the same thing again, people are like, oh, well, you get some good comedy for it. And I'm like, fuck off, this is not funny right now. Like, I'm not having a funny time. But again, I'm sure when I'm in that maybe more of a restful phase, like you said, or more of a flow, a joke will come from it and you'll be able to laugh about it. But it's not easy at the time. So yeah, there's definitely like the challenges of that as well. We're going to move on to the final questions that I ask everyone at the end of the season or at the end of every episode. And then first question is, if you could travel anywhere in Vietnam for a week, Where would you go and why?
I would go to either to Sapa or Dalat, because that's where the air is the freshest.
Yeah.
And I love mountains.
Good answer. You could do a week there, you think?
Definitely, or more.
Or more, right. Now, tourism is coming back sooner rather than later, finally, to Vietnam. We've been forced to the world for 2 years. What advice would you give to a tourist coming to Vietnam for the first time?
Be open-minded, number one.
That is the most common answer, I think.
Open to any possibility. And number two, don't plan too much.
No.
Because you have to experience the beauty of Vietnam when you are spontaneous. Of course, you have to look up before. But when you travel, just go with the flow.
And then what advice would you give to someone thinking about moving to Vietnam?
Again, be open-minded and be very adaptable. And enjoy whatever quirky things coming up in Vietnam.
Enjoy the quirky things. That is good advice.
Yeah. And if you embrace that, it's going to be a really fun place.
Yeah, that's true. Now, what do you think is the difference between an expat and an immigrant?
Ah, the million-dollar question. Well, expat is just a white privilege. Sorry, it's as simple as that.
Well, so that's why I don't think I disagree with that. And that's partly why I've put this question in, because it does come up a lot lately. I shared my views on this earlier. I mean, I think at a simple terms, as an expat is just someone who goes somewhere for a short time to work. And an immigrant is somewhere who goes to live in another country. It just so happens that most immigrants are maybe non-white. There's not much of a white immigration to another country. And I think the word that has definitely been like demonized and things like that. But I think that is the main difference between an expat and an immigrant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine line, I guess. I mean, these days, everybody call themselves expats, even if they live long term in a country. Although, you know, only those contract professionals could be call themselves expats if they stay for 3 months, 6 months only in a specific country. But we already don't think about it. Everybody's expats who are not local, basically.
But see, so this is where I think the difference is, though, because I've been here 6 years, but I'm still an expat because I can't get like a long-term visa to live here. So I'm never going to be an immigrant. You know what I mean? Whereas people can move to Australia or New Zealand, and they can move with the intention of living there forever. Therefore, they would be an immigrant. Like my sister lives in Australia. And she moved there with the intention of living there forever. She immigrated to Australia. So she's an immigrant. She's never been an expat. She's never called herself an expat. So that's where I see as a difference between an expat and an immigrant.
Yeah, I don't think about it too much, to be honest with you. I call myself usually an expat because so far I never think of like, let's say if I went and was in the Netherlands, I never really thought that I'm going to stay here forever. And when I in Vietnam, I also don't think that I'm going to stay here forever.
Yeah. So that to me is the difference. And that's when people say like, oh, like you've just said there, oh, everyone's an expat. Well, yeah, because we are all expats because nobody has immigrated here again, because there's no pathway to immigration either, which hopefully will change one day. But that's something that does make a big difference. And then last question, one of my favorite questions I've ever thought of. If Vietnam was a person, how would you describe them?
She would be a very gentle but cool, outgoing lady. She knows how to hassle, get her way, get what she wants, and have a fun life. Enjoy life to the fullest, but still respecting the ancestors.
That's awesome, though. That's a vivid description. You've got me like picturing someone in my head and being like, yeah, that's Vietnam. That's cool. That's awesome. Great, Moni. Thank you so, so much. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Thank you for coming on mine. Share with people, where can they find more about you? Where can they find out about your coaching? And then we will put the links in the show notes so people can follow them and find you.
Yeah, I'm. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, or just go to my website, subscribe to my newsletter if you want to hear more from me. But I love to connect with any channel that someone finds comfortable. It's always nice for me to hear from others, learn about other people's life. That's something I love.
Well, one question we didn't cover, so that people are going to have to contact you. We didn't talk about how to find meaning in whatever we do. So if you want to find the answer to that, then follow Moni, because that is something that she talks about a lot.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Moni. Have an amazing day.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Cheers. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of A Vietnam Podcast by 7 Million Bites. We hope you enjoy hearing our guest stories. If you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to the show and turn on notifications so you never miss a new episode. Thank you so much to Lewis Wright, who made the 7 Million Bikes music and continues to support us in every way. Also to our audio engineer, Luke Digweed, for making sure each episode sounds amazing for you. Also, a big thanks to the 7 Million Bikes community. Thank you so much. It's amazing to get to know you guys. It's amazing to see how much we're growing, and I look forward to seeing you at our next event. You can join the community today. The link is in the description of the show. You'll get free tickets to 7 Million Bikes events, episodes before anyone else, and extra special bonus content only for you, and invites to special member-only events. You will also obviously be providing massive support so that we can keep sharing people's stories with you on A Vietnam Podcast. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And remember, we have 7 seasons of stories to share with you. So check them out if you haven't already, and we hope you can listen to future episodes too, so you can laugh, connect, and discover. Cheers! I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're like me, you may use your laptop at places where you have to use public Wi-Fi. This opens you up to digital snoopers. It's a massive problem. It can be your internet service provider, or you know who, looking at what you do online, or a cyber criminal trying to steal your bank passwords or credit card info, or even a hacker at the next table trying to steal your sensitive data. These days, it is vital that you keep your data safe. NordVPN keeps all of these snoopers away. It makes your internet activity private, protects you from accessing dangerous websites that are phishing for your data, and lets you enjoy your favorite content securely, even while away from home. And it's easy to use, even I could use it. I've actually been using NordVPN for years now here in Vietnam, and I'm excited to be an affiliate partner with them. I've used NordVPN to watch Netflix, BBC, Disney Plus with ease. And I also know that my information and data are safe from prying eyes, whoever they may be. Join now and you'll get 68% off and 3 months free when you go to my link, nordvpn.com/SMB. Just again, for those hard of hearing, nordvpn.com/SMB. The link is also in the show notes. I know nobody checks them out, but go check that out and you can get the link from wherever you are listening to this podcast. As an affiliate partner, it also means that I will get a small commission when you sign up, but at no extra cost to you. So not only will you be getting a great deal through 7 Million Bikes, you get a great VPN and you'll be supporting 7 Million Bikes podcast. Stay safe online and enjoy the shows you love. Any questions, just let me know. You know how to get in touch with me. And thanks for listening to this show. Cheers.